We turn to West Michigan's Bill Huizinga, Republican from Michigan's 2nd District. Hello, Congressman.
Hey, good to be with you.
Thank you for joining us. I wanted to start, if we could, with education. President Obama called for more money for early childhood education. Is universal pre-K, preschool for all four-year-olds, is that something you could monetarily support?
Well, when I was in the state legislature, that was something, the 0 to 5 initiatives and the pre-K initiatives were something I think you saw Republicans and Democrats come together on that. The question is one, is that the federal government's role or is that a state government role? The other thing that we need to sort through is, what are we going to offset that with? Where is that money going to be coming from? What other education programs might we use that money from, or is it going to need to come from another department or another category?
So knowing that Michigan has just added $65 million to its budget for early childhood, and of course, under a Republican-controlled House and Senate with a Republican governor, it sounds like that is something that you feel was the right move.
Well, it's certainly a priority. I think, again, as I said, when I was in the state legislature, it was a priority that crossed party lines, because there is so much research that shows if you can intervene early on with kids, and I know this with my own children, the more exposure you can give to them to those positive things early on, the better off we are.
But not federal money?
We'll see. We'll see what the proposal is as we go through this budget process.
Let's go to health care. As the nation knows, the House voted time and time again to repeal Obamacare. And last night, the president said, hey, let's move on. Will that happen in the House, or will there be more votes this year in an election year to repeal the ACA?
Well, I thought it was interesting. That the president really has come to this conclusion that we can't talk about what the ACA or Obamacare needs to be replaced with. I still believe that we have common goals, which is greater access at lower cost and high-quality care. The problem is I don't believe Obamacare and the ACA, the way that it's set up, delivers those three things.
Would you vote to repeal if it came up again?
Yes, I would vote to repeal it, and we need to replace it. I don't think anybody believes that we need to go back to where we had come from. That is not success to me. Whether it's pre-existing conditions and some of the coverage areas that have been explored here, those are all positive things. However, pulling people away further from those medical decisions is not going to make us all better consumers of that medical care. And I think that is a massive mistake that was made when they structured the ACA.
When do you think it is time to move on? When is it time, knowing that the Supreme Court's upheld it, that Barack Obama was reelected? When is it time to move on?
And the House of Representatives was also reelected, and we're going to see what's going to happen here with the Senate. But rarely, if you go back in our history, rarely do we ever have just a vote done and an issue settled. It's always expanding, always evolving, always that we're going to be looking at it. If that were the case, then why are we even talking about reforming Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid? Why are we talking about what we're going to be doing with the defense budgets? What are we going to be doing with any of these? So, health care is not some sort of sacrosanct issue that we can't look at to make sure that we are improving. And if we've gone down the wrong direction, sometimes progress is turning around and going back and figuring out a different path.
If you've just joined us, we're speaking with West Michigan Congressman Bill Huizinga about the State of the Union speech last night, where the president, Congressman, talked a lot about income inequality and said he will raise minimum wage for workers who carry out new federal contracts starting in 2015. And then he challenged Congress to do the same for the national minimum wage for all Americans. Do you at all support raising that minimum wage to $10.10, as the president asked for?
Well, it's interesting why $10.10 is the magic number. I know when I was back in, again, state legislature, there was a discussion about having the living wage be $9.25, I think it was at the time. You've got SeaTac out in Washington that's just raised it to $15. Part of the problem is that there is no consensus as to what it could or should be, first of all. Second, I don't believe that it, again, hits the goal and objective. Having a government, whether it's a state or a federal government, come in and sort of just artificially jack up a wage structure is not going to bring greater employment. That is the key element here. We've got to have activity, economic activity, because guess what? If you look at what's happening out in the Dakotas, they don't have a minimum wage debate going on. That's because it's $18 to $20 just to get a job in McDonald's, much less any kind of skilled work and those kinds of things. And what I'm really afraid of is the dad of a 16-year-old and an almost 15-year-old is, where are my sons going to go to get their entry-level jobs? We've got to make sure that we're balancing that all out. The vast majority of people that are in those income levels are people that are entering into the workforce and they're learning how to work. So we need to have greater wage bumps, but I believe that that ought to be the marketplace primarily that is taking care of that.
And yet polls have shown clearly a majority of American voters are in favor of raising the federal minimum wage.
Well, I'm not sure they always think about what the implications of that means. Those are if we did everything that was poll-driven, we'd look very different, of course. But that was the same thing that happened back in Michigan. There was an increase in the state minimum wage back, I got to think of what year that was, probably 05 or 06, right around in that time frame. And a lot of that was poll-driven. But many pointed out that again, made Michigan less competitive and less attractive to our surrounding states for when those jobs were coming into the region.
One of the overarching themes of the president's speech was basically, if Congress doesn't want to work with me, I will move on without Congress. I've got a pen and a phone. In your mind, has the president kind of thrown in the towel on working with your chamber?
Well, he certainly shouldn't. That isn't how the Constitution works, and frankly, it's not the Michigan way. I'm reading a book right now, and I represent part of Jerry Ford's old district, and I'm reading a book right now. It's Write It When I'm Gone. It's all the off-the-record, candid conversations he had post-presidency, and I'm just struck time and time again. The healthy respect and understanding that he had for the legislative process and the standing, the constitutional standing of the legislature, as well as the constitutional standing of the executive branch, and how he respected both of those things. And I think what we're seeing here with the president is he is not either fully understanding that or fully respecting it, one or the other. And I think his comments circumventing the constitutional process are counterproductive and the wrong approach. And if we took more of that Jerry Ford approach, we'd find constructive and respectful ways to work together to achieve results. And ultimately, it's about relationships. And this president and this White House have very few relationships in the legislative branch. And when you don't have those relationships, you don't have trust. And if you don't have trust, you're not going to be able to work through some of those very difficult issues.
That's fair enough, but I believe there are a lot of Americans who would feel that that lack of respect for the process exists in members of the House.
I'm not sure how. We continue to pass bills. We've got over 200 bills that are sitting over in the Senate. The Senate leadership has to decide whether they're going to pass those things along. We certainly in the House don't have the ability to either say yay or nay to the presidential appointments. That is a Senate function. They've had their own flurry of activity over there, the nuclear winter that was brought about. And I give Senator Carl Levin credit. When it came time to set aside 200 years of history and the rules of the Senate, he voted no. And he voted to maintain that decorum. But that is something that the Senate has to sort out as well. I think that's a separate issue from whether the House Republicans or the House process itself has an understanding of what the president's role is.
I'd like to get your thoughts on your party's response, Congressman, the Republican response. There were, in essence, three responses to the president's speech. There was the official response, and that was Washington Representative Kathy McMorris Rodgers. Then there was a response from the Tea Party via Utah Senator Mike Lee, and then Senator Rand Paul weighed in with his response. Does having this flurry of messages hurt the party?
Well, it certainly dilutes it to a degree. I mean, you've got the president that has a bully pulpit that has command of the message, and it's going to be a unified message. I think it's interesting to note that there may be some other objectives out there other than getting the party message out from some of those folks. You know, whether they're running for president or whatever their motives might be. But clearly, I think it would be better for the Republicans as much as possible to have a unified voice.
And finally, Congressman, in that 65-minute speech that President Obama gave, did you hear anything you could really get behind?
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, I thought Interesting. I'm curious to hear more about his MyRA program. Exactly, what that means. That is something that I think we're all looking for. Is what are some ways to make sure that people are prepared for their retirement, knowing that there's continued challenges with Social Security, and I think probably some of the energy issues. When he said that he wanted to lower taxes for business and quote/slash bureaucracy to streamline permits, that was something I'd written down. Probably the most unifying moment of the evening, though, was when Staff Sergeant Corey Remsburg was there, and it was so powerful. In fact, I snapped a photo from down on the floor up at him, just because I was so moved by it. And I think it's clear that America stands with those who have served us in uniform.
Congressman Bill Huizinga, representing the 2nd District from West Michigan. Thank you so much for speaking with us, Congressman.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you.